This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger. Good morning to you. Good morning to the world. With our technology, we're able to talk to people around the world. I just read an email from South Africa, a photograph of an elephant and a lion walking together in South Africa that was sent to me by a listener there. So anyway, we'll say good morning to you. Saturday morning show, and we're coming up finally with weather that could indicate there will be spring. And, well, maybe not spring, but summer. We may go directly from winter to summer, because when I talked to my sister at Westby, Wisconsin this week, about 3 days ago, that's near La Crosse on the west side of the state, they had gotten 10 inches of snow middle of this week in one day. 2 inches an hour it fell. So that weather continues to be unusual, but I think we're finally going to find weather that will allow planters to go to work, farmers to go to work in the Midwest, and we'll be talking a little bit about that. Also talking about the egg recall, and of course the lettuce recall that we're talking about is coming from the lettuce producer of the winter, and that's the Imperial Valley on the border between California and Arizona. So that's close by where we are right now, and they're still struggling to find the farm that produced the lettuce that's causing some salmonella outbreaks. So that and eggs this week that held the wrong kind of a spotlight. Didn't really want to see that. But anyway, we're going to be talking about farmers markets, and Max's guest this morning will be a young lady from Amarillo, Texas, who is in the market analysis and trading business. So she'll be checking in with Max a little bit later on. And we're going to talk more about farmers markets and what it takes to operate them, and some workshops that are on the schedule for farmers market operators in the state of Illinois. So stay with us. We'll get to that visit when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Eventually, winter in the Midwest will come to an end, and we'll be able to go to farmers markets, as many of us do every summer. But there's a lot going on with farmers markets. The Illinois Farm Bureau involved, and on the line with me this morning, Regella Scavuzzo, who is the manager of the local foods program at Illinois Farm Bureau. Good morning, and that sounds like a full-time job, Regella, regardless of the season.
It is, and good morning to you. We really love supporting our local food system, and farmers markets is one great way to support them.
How much of an impact do farmers markets have on the food market in Illinois? How many are there?
There are over 300 farmers markets throughout the state, actually making us the third largest per capita state to have the most farmers market in the country.
Do you know which state leads the nation?
It is probably New York or California.
Right. Yeah, I would think so. But anyway, next month, in the month of May, you have something happening to help people who run farmers markets. Talk to me about it.
We do. So this is not just for farmers markets, but also for those wonderful specialty growers out there doing farmers markets, farm stands, or CSAs. We have partnered with Family Farmed out of Chicago and several of our county programs to offer a direct-to-market success class, which is a huge opportunity because we're offering it 3 times, and it is free to attend. And it is jam-packed with opportunities.
Let's begin with the dates and the locations, because you've got 3 of them next month.
All right, so we're going to kick it off May 7th in Southern Illinois at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, hosted by Jackson and Union County Farm Bureau. Then it's going to be May 10th in Henry County at the Henry County Farm Bureau office. And it's going to be hosted by Rock Island, Mercer, and Henry County Farm Bureaus. And we're going to finish it off on May 11th in Champaign County at Champaign County Farm Bureau, hosted by Champaign County Farm Bureau.
And give me a rundown on what you're going to be talking about at these one-day workshops.
Absolutely. So they're going to run from 9 to 4 with networking at 8:30 in the morning. Each are going to be a little different to their specific area. But overall, things that you might hear about are understanding your customer needs, how to merchandise, seeking buyers to maintain healthy relationships, sorting and packing, networking, details on varieties, quality, pricing, communication, marketing, all of those different ways to reach your audience to make sure that your farmer's market or your farm stands are reaching the community and out there so people know who you are, what you're doing, and why they should buy from you. You're going to get a free copy of The Direct Market Success. And let me tell you, this book is huge and it's a wonderful resource that usually retails at $70.
One of the things, because my home is in Huntley and I'm about 3 miles away from Tom's Market that we go to faithfully during the summer. But one of the challenges I see as a grower is how do you space your planting so that you'll have product in May or June and again in September, October? Do you get into that at all?
We get into it a little bit, and we will be offering more classes on that as well. Extending your growing season is really important, and so they'll talk about that. How do you make sure you have diverse product that keeps people interested? Because if you run out of stuff, then you lose your opportunity to sell. So that will definitely be integrated into the workshops.
And who should attend these workshops? Just farmers market operators or other people?
Farmers market operators, farm stands, anybody that's trying to do direct farm sales. So your farmers or anybody that's trying to sell direct to the consumer. And this doesn't have to just be specialty crops. Now, it'll have a heavy focus on that. But if you do livestock and you're trying to sell directly to the consumer, then you should come to this as well. So it's going to touch on a lot of things that are really important to basic business.
And are all of these things covered in the free manual that each participant will receive?
So the manual's back sectioned off. So there'll be a lot about specialty crops specifically, but the merchandising, the marketing, all of those things are also in those resources. So if you can't attend, we can still, with our wonderful grant opportunity through USDA, you can still get a free copy of the book even if you can't come to the workshop.
It has been amazing to me at the growth of the farmers markets because when did you start this program for people in the farmers market business? How many years ago?
So we actually didn't start it. This is a family farm project. They've had it's a pretty new workshop, but farmers markets in itself have been growing exponentially around the country and in this state. Illinois Farmers Market Association has been a wonderful resource for those trying to grow the farmers market. So this is the first time we've offered this class.
Okay. Well, I love farmers markets because it gives city folks the opportunity to meet firsthand, face-to-face, the people who produce a lot of their food. And I would guess the educational opportunities for city folks on farming really could be one of the highlights of a visit to a farmers market.
It's true. This is your opportunity to put a face to your farmers. And so we think it's really important because we want to tell farmers stories. Your food is coming from farmers. Everything you eat comes from a farmer. So getting to know them and understanding them is important. And so getting out and finding the opportunities to meet them is a great way to do that.
So May 7, Southern Illinois University. May 10, Henry County Farm Bureau in Cambridge. May 11, the Champaign County Farm Bureau in Champaign. How do they register and when should they register?
Registration is really easy. They need to go to www.ilfb.org livelocal, and you can register on there. And we ask you register by May 1st so that we make sure we have enough food for you.
All right, www.ilfb, that's for Illinois Farm Bureau, ilfb.org/livelocal for those of you who want to register to attend. And it really sounds like a great educational opportunity.
It is one you don't want to miss.
Well, we thank you for sharing with us the background and the knowledge that people will gather. And hope you have good weather. No snow, I hope. And that of people learn a lot of things from these workshops. Regella Scabuzzo, the manager of the Illinois Farm Bureau Local Foods Program here on the Saturday Morning Show. It is 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio Chicago. Glad to have you along with us this morning. Unfortunately, in the food industry, we've gone through a week or so of some recalls, eggs and lettuce. Lettuce coming from the lettuce capital of the world during the winter season here in the U.S., right here in California, Arizona, in the Imperial Valley. And they're still looking for the source. Where did that lettuce come from? What farm was having problems that led to this recall? And so they're still looking for that. But then we had the recall of 200 million eggs coming from a chicken farm in North Carolina operated by an Indiana egg producer. Inspectors found unacceptable rodent activity and dirty equipment at the Rose Acre Farms egg operation in Pantego, North Carolina, during visits from March 26 to April 11, according to the Food and Drug Administration report. And they also noted employees touching dirty floors, equipment, and their bodies without washing their hands. And so they have taken the step, and the company itself did, of recalling more than 200 million eggs while they get that problem in North Carolina cleaned up. And the FDA said at least 23 illnesses have been reported. The eggs were distributed to consumers in Colorado, Florida, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia. So that recall making news this week in the food production industry. Another story that caught quite a bit of attention is the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. He's in trouble. He's in trouble with some policies of the federal government. Scott Pruitt, according to the charges, has violated the law. The White House Budget Office said it was probing whether a $43,000 soundproof phone booth installed for EPA agency chief Scott Pruitt violated the law. At the same time, dozens of Democratic senators calling for him to resign over the allegations of ethics lapses. Pruitt has been under fire for potential violations, including flying first class, excessive spending on security, and the rental of a room in a Washington condominium tied to an energy lobbyist. Megan Burris, she's an Office of Management and Budget spokeswoman, said her office was working with the EPA to review whether the approval of the privacy phone booth installed in Pruitt's office was a potential violation of a law that prohibits federal agencies from incurring expenses in excess of funds that are available. The EPA's approval of the phone booth violated that law. Another one requiring agencies to notify Congress when they obligate more than $5,000 in federal funds to make improvements in an office of a presidential appointee. And so Pruitt said the phone booth is necessary for him to conduct official business And when asked about the OMB's probe, an EPA spokesman said his agency disagreed that spending on the booth required notification to Congress. Said the agency is addressing the GAO's concern. But both Republican and Democratic lawmakers have criticized Pruitt over the allegations. And Wednesday of this week, 38 Democratic U.S. senators and an independent who votes with them in the 100-member chamber introduced a resolution calling for Pruitt to resign, saying Pruitt has completely violated the trust of the American people and the standards of his office with a list of ethical transgressions that grows longer by the day. And so that getting the attention on Capitol Hill more than the writing of the farm bill. Although House Agriculture Committee did report its version of the farm bill that they've been working on this week. And it has a long way to go before becoming reality, because this is the House Agriculture Committee version, still waiting for the Senate version and hoping we can get something that members of Congress will agree on by the end of September, which I think is the deadline for getting the farm bill written, so that we don't have to go back to a farm bill that was written back in 1948. And if we don't get the farm bill written on time, then everything in agricultural policy goes back to laws that were passed in 1948. And with all of that going on, of course, the weather continues to be a concern, because April apparently is vying for being the coldest April since 1895. And if corn growers plant fewer than the 88 million corn acres they said they'd plant back in March, it would be the smallest area since 2009. And then, of course, late planting raises questions on yield. And when corn planting progress is notably below average by the middle of May, market watchers start to genuinely worry that plantings will fall below the USDA's March planting intentions report. And in the last two decades, there were 10 instances in which May 15th planting progress was below the long-term average of 75%. And so we're going to keep an eye on that, and hopefully the weather, once it makes its turn, will not go back to 10 inches of snowfall in parts of the northern Corn Belt, which we saw this past week. So if it isn't one thing, it's another to be concerned about if you're an agricultural producer, and all of us depend on that producer for our food supply. And we're back with the second half of the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong will be joining us with his guest a little bit later. And there's always a lot to talk about in the world of agriculture, but right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion Samuelson. This week, looking at the government change in Cuba this week and how it may lead to different relations with Cuba. Maybe.
I know you love your glass ceramic cooktop, except when it's time to clean it. So let me tell you about one product that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It's Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner, strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots and yet gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, polishes, and conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. Learn more at WHINK.com.
For the first time in well over 40 years, the island nation 90 miles south of Florida will not be governed by a member of the Castro family. Now, I'm sure many of you remember the early 60s when Fidel Castro took over the government of Cuba And the United States imposed one of the worst trade embargo decisions ever made by shutting off all trade to Cuba. And a lot of that was agricultural trade, and it bothered farmers here in the United States. But with the naming of a new president last week, things could be changing. And James Williams, president of Engaged Cuba, hopes they will change. Let me share some of what he had to say. The ascension of President Diaz-Canel marks a historic generation change in Cuba. While many will speculate on what the change will mean, much is unknown. What we do know is that the future of Cuba is for the Cuban people to decide, and we should play a constructive role in the process. He said, what we in the United States can do is to design a U.S. policy to best encourage the change we'd like to see. For almost 60 years, we have pursued an embargo policy that has failed, and with new generational leadership in Cuba, we now have an opportunity to reimagine our policy for the 21st century. We know that continuing the embargo will not work, so let us not double down on 60 years of failure. I couldn't agree with Mr. Williams more on the need to have a policies change in Cuba. I visited Cuba in 1999 as part of the humanitarian mission, and all I heard from Cuban people was, we miss the long grain Texas rice, we miss many of the other food products from the U.S., and dairy farmers said, we miss the genetics of the U.S. Well, I'm hoping we will do what Mr. Williams suggested and reestablish a better trade relationship with Cuba, just off the Florida coast. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks here on WGN Radio Chicago, and Max Armstrong standing by with his guest to join us here. So we'll get to that visit when we continue on the Saturday morning show.
Our guest this weekend in the studio, Donna Hughes from Daniels Trading, Amarillo, Texas. Can we say also that you're getting ready to shift roles and join a new company?
You certainly can. I will be taking the position of Vice President of Grain and Risk Management for Cape & Son, a grain and cottonseed merchandiser out of Abilene, Texas, and that begins on May 1st.
Well, the grains change? I mean, the grains that you work with, will they be any different than what you have?
You know, right now I service a variety of producers from cattle to cotton, soybeans, corn, the whole, you know, the whole deal. Basically, what we'll be focusing on at this point is developing a program for wheat producers, buying from wheat producers, selling to end users, and helping those producers to hedge cash sales in the market. I'll also be working with some of the other salesmen who sell DDGs and cottonseed to dairies. So it's going to be a little bit different, but I think I'm really going to enjoy it.
Let's talk about wheat. Since you mentioned that, is there any hope for that wheat that has looked so bleak? Will it be improving at all before harvest, or is it pretty much being written off by many of these producers?
We've got a lot of producers down in our area that have basically disastered out at this point, and it's been a real rough go of it for the last 2 or 3 years with wheat producers. So, you know, heartfelt to say that this year it's not going to be a good season for most of them.
I was thinking the other day about some of your customers who must have been reacting to the news of a, 170%+ tariff slapped on grain sorghum by China. That was the announcement. And some of your folks have seen a nice market in China for the grain sorghum they produce at times in the past couple of years. What reaction did you hear about that?
Well, you know, of course, there's concern anytime you have some type of news like that. I think, you know, it's a pretty much a wait-and-see attitude as to, are they really going to go through with this? Is this a bargaining chip? You know, what's the situation going to develop into? But at the same time, you always want to err to caution. And, you know, in case there is something that may happen, you want to make sure you've got your bottom line protected.
Hasn't the market handled pretty well all of this chatter about trade back and forth between the United States and China?
You know, we've had some pretty volatile markets at times, but I think, you know, traders are smart enough to realize that, you know, there may be, you know, some things that develop and some things that don't. You know, talk is talk, and we'll have to see if, you know, that comes to action.
But overall, the price depressant hasn't been that bad, has it, from all of the trade talk?
Not really. I would say, you know, with the grains and the cotton, not so much. We did have a pretty big sell-off in the livestock.
Right.
And, you know, that did, you know, rattle some of the producers to a degree. But, you know, we're coming back on that. We've got some seasonals that are coming up that, you know, should get those markets higher. And so hopefully, you know, we could shrug off that news and get this market going again.
Yeah, let us not forget that for that pork market, 25% of what we produce in the United States has to go into export, correct?
Yeah, you know, there is a good amount of pork that we do export. One of the questions that we've had, you know, throughout this whole deal in regard to the pork is the fact that, you know, the Chinese do own one of the biggest pork packers in the United States, Smithfield Packing. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what type of deal are they going to put together? How would that affect them in that way? It's kind of like shooting yourself in the foot kind of thing. So, you know, we're really watching to see how this develops.
That's a good point. In terms of beef, we don't export as much as we do from our pork production, correct?
That is correct. You know, we have seen some programs of late coming into place. There's a lot of restrictions on beef to China. You know, that could be a very volatile situation if you have something that's rejected. We do work with a few folks that are currently in development with programs like that, and the restrictions on it are pretty heavy.
Let's switch grains. Let's talk a little bit about corn and soybean as we are coming into this planting season. Many growers would like to be in the planting season, but here we are. You know, we're looking at the calendar. We're here at about the third week of April. We're not too late for most of these folks, even yet, are we?
No, I mean, we still have a few weeks, and, you know, as the weather gets out in front of us, you know, hopefully we can get some drier weather and something more conducive to getting folks out into the field.
Would it be correct to assume that the farmers are probably more concerned about it than the market is right now?
Probably at this point, that would be a yes.
As the weekly crop bulletins come along, we'll watch to see if indeed the progress is advancing. Is there some kind of a benchmark that you have in mind as you look at those early days of May, where we ought to be in terms of getting the corn crop planted first to begin with?
Well, you know, I think, you know, our weekly updates that we get from USDA on Monday afternoons to, you know, give us the planting progress, those are, you know, pretty good guidelines to be looking at. We'll get our first update on soybeans this coming Monday, and we'll see what USDA has to say about that. But, you know, the past report that we did get last Monday on corn showed it just a bit behind. But like you say, you know, we're early in the season, and so I expect that number will increase as we go forward.
The farmer would hasten to point out that you don't have a crop if you don't get it planted. But a number of agronomists have shared in recent weeks that early planting is just one element, that there are other factors that ultimately, at the end of the game, can make even more of a difference in the yield at the final harvest of the season. So why do we pay so much attention to planting progress?
Oh, I think, you know, it's, you know, the start of the season, anticipation of what may be to come, and, you know, just probably the more out front you can get in those ways, the better you feel about, you know, what's to come at the end. But, you know, just because you don't get the early planting done like you want to, again, you know, with yield, I mean, you could certainly be in a good position at the end of the season.
What's your thought about price spikes during the planting progress, especially if we continue to have some cold weather at times here over the next 6 weeks or so, Donna?
Those are good opportunities for producers if they feel comfortable to either cash forward contracts with elevators, or to take advantage of the markets in putting on some options or selling futures to ensure their price.
Many growers will be so focused, though, on what needs to be done in the field, isn't it a little bit difficult to pay attention to marketing at that time?
It is kind of difficult, although what we tell our producers is, you know, it's kind of like get to know your customer kind of thing. You tell me what it is you have to plant, you know, what your plan is for marketing going forward, and when those opportunities come, then we'll be sure to get with you before you're supposed to take action so that you're not too late for the market.
So it's important to not just plan what you're doing in the field, but to plan during the planting season what might need to be done in terms of marketing.
Absolutely. That's one of the big points that we make to producers that come on board with us is you need to make a plan, and you can always tweak your plan, but at least get some sort of roadmap going forward so that when the opportunities in the market do come, you could take advantage of that, stay close with your broker, keep them informed, and you've got a bunch of partners out there that want to help you be successful, and so you need to pull on all those resources.
Donna, is it still your sense, though, that many producers do not do that kind of marketing planning, marketing emphasis that can make them successful or more successful?
You know, unfortunately, there are, producers who make the decision not to be involved. The point being that, you know, whether you're involved in the futures market or not, you are involved. It does affect what goes on with cash prices at times and vice versa. They're connected pretty tight at times. And so, getting involved with a broker or getting involved with, any of the other types of resources, a banker, someone that can advise you on good opportunities, really essential in being successful. They put so much into the resources of time and effort and finances and getting the crop in the ground and growing it throughout the year. You don't want to drop the ball at the end with the marketing.
Back to those Monday afternoon reports. There will be a time a few weeks down the road when we'll shift from watching planting progress into watching crop development and crop conditions. When it comes to those conditions later in the season, will you pay much attention to them? I mean, looking back at what happened last year at the end of the day with yields better than expected, will the market maybe play down those a little bit when it comes to crop conditions?
I think, producers and traders always keep that in mind, as we get out through the summer and maybe we have, certain dry periods or, maybe circumstances where there's too much rain at times. I think, the price spikes that those provide absolutely should be taken advantage of by producers. But in the end, what comes at the end of the season is what counts. But at the same time, as we go through the season, those types of events are always kept in mind.
There will still be some emotional reaction along the way, you think?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's, farmers can take advantage of that.
Yes, they can. As prices climb on emotion in the market, that always makes for opportunity. Volatility makes for opportunity. And so, they just have to stay aware and keep in mind what's a good price for them in their marketing plan.
Donna Hughes, thanks for coming in. Congratulations to you as you make that switch from Daniels Trading to CAPE, I believe is the name of the company, right?
CAPE & Son out of Abilene, Texas.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
We're 5 minutes away from news time here on WGN Radio Chicago, but that gives us time to look back to yesterday, what happened in livestock and grain futures, but what might happen in the coming week in the cattle market, because the cattle on feed report issued by USDA after the market closed yesterday. And so here we go. The number of cattle on feed at feedlots in the United States went up 9% over a month ago, and the trade was looking for an increase of about 7.5%. The number of cattle placed on feed in March, 91% of a year ago. And that's a little lower than they were expecting. They were expecting 89.8 million cattle. Number of cattle marketed in March came right on the expectation, down 4% from a year ago for the number of cattle on feed. A bearish report in the minds of some traders, and particularly April and June cattle, with the 9% increase in the number of cattle on feed, but we'll have to wait till Monday to see. We ended the week with a pretty good cattle market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The June live cattle contract picked up 95 cents a hundredweight yesterday to close at 103.95, and the April feeder cattle contract up $1.40 to close the week at $138.62 a hundredweight. On the other hand, the hog market, not quite as strong yesterday. The June lean hog contract ended the week at $77.50 a hundredweight, down 57 cents for the week. December hogs were down 50 cents a hundredweight at an even $62 for the week. The grain market came under pretty good pressure yesterday. Improving weather for the U.S. crop, and also disappointing numbers in exports. Maybe the export of soybeans particularly has slowed down in light of all of the trade and tariff talk that we had earlier this spring. So at the end of the day yesterday, with improved conditions and hopefully better moisture for the winter wheat crop here in the U.S., the July wheat contract lost 12 and three-quarter cents a bushel, closing at $4.78. July corn contract down 5 1/4 cents a bushel, ended the week at 3.85 and three-quarters, and the July soybean contract at $10.40 a bushel on the close, down 9 cents for the week, for the day. And that's the situation in the grain market yesterday. A lot of red on my grain market screen yesterday. One other comment. I've been watching, and I'm sure you have as well, on the national TV news, the wildfires that have hit in the Southwest. Not so much in California and not so much in Arizona, although I think there's one pretty good wildfire underway here. But we have seen the flames and the smoke devouring basically vegetation. But there's more impacted by these wildfires, and that's livestock producers, particularly in northwest Oklahoma, who have lost animals to the recent wildfires. But there may be help. The U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency has a livestock indemnity program. That program provides assistance to producers who have experienced abnormal livestock mortality due to a number of eligible loss conditions, among them adverse weather, some disease outbreaks, attacks by animals reintroduced by the government. That would be wolves that take on baby calves and all that sort of thing. And then the wildfires that have killed cattle, done more than destroy vegetation. But the recent wildfires in northwestern Oklahoma will qualify as an adverse weather-related loss. LIP payments are made by calculating 75% of the fair market value for the affected livestock. So there will be some help for those ranchers, particularly in Oklahoma, that lost livestock in the wildfires. Well, that's our time. Our thanks, as always, to Bob Ferguson in Chicago at our WGN studios for controlling this whole situation on the air. And my thanks to you for joining Max and me every week here on the Saturday morning show. And, of course, we come to you on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.